David's Daily Digital Dollop, Dollop 129, The Hitchhiker's Bride. To say that yesterday's wedding went without a hitch wouldn't be entirely accurate. For a start, Sean and Emily were married. Sorry, should I maybe have built the suspense a little bit longer there? But that wasn't the only hitch of the day. One of the guests, an eccentric 79-year-old, decided to attend the ceremony in a kilt. 45 minutes before the wedding, he realised that he'd left the kilt at home in Rotherham. He decided that he would have time to drive back, get his kilt, and then return to the venue in time for the ceremony. He didn't tell anyone about this. I think if he had told someone, then they would have pointed out that it was unlikely to take him only 40 minutes to drive from Sheffield to Rotherham and back. At 3 o'clock, everyone was in their seats, ready for the wedding to start, which it was due to do at 3 o'clock. However, someone was missing. It was Ian, the man who'd gone home for his kilt. Except no one knew this. As far as we were all aware, he was at the venue, as we'd seen him only an hour ago. We searched around the venue grounds, went to his room, which was in the venue that the wedding was taking place, but he was nowhere to be found. The registrars had to be at another wedding in the next hour, and so they couldn't afford to wait around. So, the wedding started without him. He did make some of the wedding ceremony, but just not the wedding part. For by the time he made it back, Sean and Emily had already been married. But at least he got to see Sean and Emily signing some legal documents. Although no one else was really looking at the legal document signing, because they were all staring at the man who'd just come crashing into the wedding, out of breath, and desperately trying to finish fastening his kilt. He then whispered to the woman next to him, although quite a loud whisper, probably as a result of him being deaf, "Would you give me a hand with me sporran, love?" As she awkwardly tried to help him with his sporran, he loudly whispered, "Have I missed much?" I'm not sure if he realised that he'd missed the actual wedding bit of the ceremony, which might explain why he then proceeded to get out a massive, unwieldy, antiquated video camera and start filming. At which point, the registrar thanked us all for coming, we applauded the newlyweds, and the ceremony ended. In the best man speech, I told a story about when Sean and I went hitchhiking around the country together in 2005. I documented our hitchhiking experiences on cassette tape, and I'll probably dig them out for the Young'uns podcast and play some bits out and intersperse it with some retrospective detail and anecdotes. This particular incident that I mentioned in the speech was about the day when Sean and I had spent an entire day waiting for a lift. We were so convinced that success was just around the corner, and that if we moved to go to the toilet or get some food, then it would mean that we'd miss the one person who'd pick us up, and we'd then have to wait hours before another ride presented itself. So, we resolutely stood at the roadside, convinced that any minute now someone would pick us up. And we waited. And we waited. Eventually, at some point late evening, someone offered us a lift. We managed to get about 100 miles or so further south. So all in all, it had been a really great day. Unless you take into account the fact that we'd spent most of it at the side of the road, with our bladders agonisingly bursting and our stomachs painfully rumbling out of starvation. But apart from that, by the time we got out of the car, it was about 10 o'clock. Everywhere seemed pretty much deserted. The only place that seemed open was a McDonald's. We went to the McDonald's and immediately visited the toilet for a much-needed urinate. We were both starving, and given that there didn't seem to be anywhere else around, I suggested that we got something from McDonald's. At this suggestion, Sean went off on a massive rant about global corporations and capitalism. He proudly declared that, starving though he may be, he was not prepared to eat at McDonald's. Instead, he would seek out a local independent place to eat. I didn't hold out much hope of finding anywhere, but given Sean's adamance, I accompanied him on search for a local independent eatery. We walked for over an hour, with barely any energy to actually do so, given that we hadn't eaten for hours. There was nothing else open. We ended up walking in a massive circle and came back to the McDonald's that we'd left over an hour ago. I assumed that given that we'd done all we could, surely our only option now was to eat at the McDonald's. But Sean wholeheartedly refused and proceeded to give me another lecture about global corporations and proudly declared that he would wait until the morning and then support the local bakery by eating there. We were both ravenous, and this didn't help our mood, and so we just stood there in the doorway of McDonald's, loudly arguing with each other about whether to eat there. I said that if there was a local bakery open, then I'd be happy to eat there, but the fact that there wasn't meant that we might as well eat at McDonald's. We didn't have a choice. But then he retorted by saying that we always have a choice. Our voices were getting louder and our argument got more heated. I tried to reason with him, stating that the people who worked at McDonald's were local, ordinary people, and that by eating at McDonald's we will be supporting these local people, never mind the whole global corporation aspect. I suggested that he should focus on this, but Sean countered this by bemoaning the low wages that these people would be getting, and how he didn't want to support such an infrastructure. I responded by saying that he had no idea how much the staff at his precious local bakery were getting paid. The argument went on for some time, growing in volume and intensity. In the end, I stormed into McDonald's and ordered some food, because I felt as if I would pass out if I didn't. Sean stormed in behind me. We both sat at the table while I ate, and Sean seethed. I offered to share my food with him, reasoning that it would mean that we'd only bought one meal, yet at least he would get something to eat. But Sean refused to accept any food, and so we just sat in silence while I hurriedly ate. We then pitched the tent in silence outside the gates of the McDonald's and went straight to bed. I lay there awake for hours, listening to the sound of Sean's stomach violently rumbling while he tossed and turned, clearly too hungry to sleep. In the morning, he got up early and returned to the tent whistling, for he had been to the local bakery and bought loads of food. Nowadays, Sean will happily eat a McDonald's. I would prefer not to, but there have been times when we've had options and Sean has plucked for the McDonald's. I mentioned this in my speech and bemoaned the fact that as Sean grew older, he let his principles slip and lowered his high ideals and standards. He became jaded and worn down by life and became happy to settle for less. At which point, I hilariously said, which neatly brings me to the subject of Emily. I believe that it's customary for the best man to insult the bride in his speech. However, my hilarious joke worked on two levels, because I then tied it into the story of Sean and Emily's first date, which was at Nando's, a global chain. I then pulled off another amazing bit of comedy when I turned to Emily and said, it was Nando's, wasn't it? After she had said yes, I responded with, yes, Nando's, just chicken. As you would imagine, the audience went wild. I was lifted into the air and I did a crowd-surfed lap of honour. The other hitch was related to the DJ. The venue said that if they wanted a DJ at the wedding, then they'd have to use the venue's in-house DJ. If this was the Sean of 11 years ago, then he would have put his foot down and ranted about wanting to support an independent local DJ. But the modern-day Sean simply agreed to this rule. The DJ didn't get off to the best of starts. We all stood around Sean and Emily, ready to watch their first dance. Ladies and gentlemen, let's hear it for the happy couple. Sean and Emma. Some people laughed, some people pulled faces at the DJ, others shouted, Emily! She's called Emily! I think that, being drunk, I found it massively hilarious, and I raised my glass and loudly shouted, to Sean and Emma! Come on! The DJ continued. That was terrible! I can't hear you! Let's try again! Raise your glasses to the happy couple, Sean and Emma! To Sean and Emma! I shouted again, raising my glass and drunkenly cackling. Someone went up to the DJ and told him that it was Emily. He eventually got it right on the third time of trying. And now, the first dance, he announced. A hush descended over the room, followed by a loud, cacophonous series of crackles and bangs. At first, I assumed that this might have been the first dance. Perhaps it was a piece by John Cage, but then I realised that they hadn't actually started dancing. And then the DJ announced that he was having a few technical problems, except the mic wasn't working, so he just tried to shout loudly above the din. The crackles continued, and he nervously started fiddling with wires while testing the microphone by shouting, 1-2, 1-2, and then loudly shouting things at us, off mic, in order to desperately stall for time. Okay, while I try and sort this out, let's have a rendition of Oh, He's a Jolly Good Fellow, for Sean and Emma. In his flusterment, which I know isn't actually a word, but it really should be, he'd obviously forgotten the whole Emma-Emily debacle from just a couple of minutes earlier. He'd also failed to realise the absurdity of singing for He's a Jolly Good Fellow to two people, one of whom was a woman, and thus not a fellow. Plus, their jolliness was being somewhat tempered by the fact that the DJ kept calling the bride the wrong name, and he didn't seem to be able to get the music on. He valiantly attempted to get everyone to sing the song by singing it himself, while he desperately started wrenching wires out of the back of his equipment, which made a series of loud banging sounds to add to the din that was already occurring. A few of us loudly joined in with, for he's a jolly good fellow, finding the ridiculousness of it all immensely funny. Eventually, he managed to get the equipment working, and once again announced that it was time for the first dance. He pressed play, and the music began to emanate from the speakers. Sean and Emily looked around nervously. It was clear that it was the wrong song. But Sean and Emily are both in their 30s now, and as already discussed earlier in this dollop, they have had to start accepting things and compromising, lowering their ideals and standards, which is probably why, after a few seconds of standing there and not dancing, they began to awkwardly move to the music, which is something that I didn't recognise, and apparently they didn't recognise either. So they danced their first dance to the wrong song, and we all stood and watched and applauded at the end, even though we all knew that it clearly wasn't the right song. In fact, the only person who didn't seem to know this was the DJ, who continued to call Emily Emma throughout the night. Still, despite the disorganised, unpunctual, eccentric, kilt-wearing old man and the world's worst DJ, everything else went perfectly. And most importantly of all, they got married, which is the main point, really. So, come on, wherever you are, let's raise an imaginary or a real glass, if you've got one, and let's toast the happy couple. To Sean and Emma, for he's a jolly good fellow.